come here to Juventus in our opening game of the Champions League and play like we did, second half was extraordinary. Extraordinary. And we've gone and got a decision like that there. It's absolutely extraordinary. We were magnificent, magnificent. Coming roaring in there against Juventus, who spent £100 million and we were fantastic.
Gap looks up. Perfect cross to the back post, and it's Thompson. Alan Thompson has fired Celtic ahead, as he did in Stuttgart earlier in the year.
2-0 to Celtic! Absolutely sensational! Plays it into Nakamura! Left side Nakamura! What a shot that is! Shot it again! Finishes it off! What a night at Celtic Park! That goal was simply majestic!
Is that actually small Guru across? Well, Guru left foot in corner in towards the far post! Header in! It's a goal for Celtic! Wanyama has put them in front! Three in the far post! His header was true! Precisely what Celtic need! Celtic 1, Barcelona 0.
Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. This week in the Celtic Underground series looking at the Champions League 11, we are at the midfielders. We've already had the human torpedo and Mark Cooper look at the goalkeepers and defenders respectively. So this week we are looking at that area of the park where we have the combination of the workhorses and the artisans. I'm stretching it there. Yeah, I know. Anyway, we're looking at those, and so it's the midfield. And since we're talking about workhorses and artisans, this week I'm joined by St. Anthony and Lackeymore. I'll let you decide which one is which, and I hope you enjoy, and don't forget to pick your 11. So I'm now joined by Lackeymore and St. Anthony. So how are you guys doing?
Fine, thank you.
Very well, thank you.
All geared up and ready for extolling the virtues of the players. So what I will do is I will start off, and for the people listening who've not bothered looking at any websites where I've stuck on appearances, I will go through the players. Now, I should cover off one caveat that you guys can decide if you want to cover it or not. Chalm McGrew, if he's played Champions League football, apart from this season, and I'm not looking at this season because that's not fair to the people, to the forwards who'll have had three Champions League games by the time we started and the goalkeepers didn't. Chalm McGrew has played in midfield this season in Champions League football. But last season he played in defence, so that's why he's down as a defender in Champions League stuff for what we've done.
But
so
the midfielders the greatest respect were looking to Chalm McGrew, I don't think he would get a place in the midfield.
No.
Okay, That resolves that problem. I didn't want to say it because sometimes I feel as though I sound as though I'm criticising Charlie McGrew. I'm not. So midfielders and starting appearances are Alan Thompson with 13, Paul Lambert with 6, Stelian Petrov with 17, Didier Gat 16. There could be debates as to whether I want him a right back. Neil Lennon 26 Champions League starts. Bobby Petter 2. Lumo Marabchuk just the 1. Liam Miller 2. Aidan McGeady 17. Nakamura 15. Hartley 11. Donati 5. Gravison 4. Robson 5. Jarasic 8. Snow 5. Maloney 6. Stephen Pearson 1. Scott Brown 19. Chris Commons 6. James Forrest 2. Victor Wanyama 7. Joe Ledley 4. And Kyle 2. And Lackey, what were you wanting to interject
there? Well, I was thinking, I saw the Miller and quickly looked up, it was Kenny Miller, but it's obviously Liam Miller.
Yes, Liam Miller. It's not Kenny Miller. No, Liam Miller, who, well, we'll get on to him in a minute. The goal scorers, we were 48 goals prior to this season in the Champions League. From midfielders, Alan Thompson's the top goal scorer in Champions League group stages or last 16 with 3. Liam Miller, 2. Nakamura 2, Jiří Jarasík 2, Aidan McGeady 2, Barry Robson 2, Stelian Petrov 1, Stephen Pearson 1, Massimo Donati, the famous one, Sean Maloney 1, Victor Wanyama 1, Chris Commons 1, and own goals is 1. So, I will leave it to you two to take it away and extol the virtues, but I suppose we should maybe take it in chronological order and try and look at the sort of the likes of Thompson, Lambert, Petrov, and Neil Lennon's midfield. So I don't know who wants to start. Lackey, St. Anthony.
I'm astonished to see Neil Lennon with 26 appearances. I never appreciated for a minute that he played so often in the Champions League. That's an outstanding number of appearances, considering that Lennon came to Celtic fairly late in his career. So, that's the one that jumps out at me. The other one that jumps out at me as well, Stephen Pearson made 1 appearance. What a cracking appearance that was! Mm-hmm. That was the Benfica game.
Yeah, the 3-0 against Benfica.
And. That he scored that night. I'm surprised that he didn't play anymore. I have to say that first time off as well, Liam Miller is a real sore point with me because those games that he played against Lyon and against Anderlecht, it was truly outstanding. And for a young boy of his age, just coming through to maturity, he could have been on our midfield for a number of years. And I regret very much that he did leave us, not only because he was a good player, but I think in fairness to himself, he never quite developed the way he should have developed. And if he'd have stayed here under O'Neill and the players that we had at that time, he would have become a fantastic player. And I think he wasted his career, if I can be as blunt as that.
He's actually the example when we are going for a player and people say that player would be better off staying at his own club for another season before coming to Celtic. And we would say, oh, well, that's ridiculous. He should come to Celtic playing a better team. But actually, Liam Miller is an example of, from our perspective, exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I think the thing about Liam Miller when he went to Manchester United was, they had a tremendous midfield. So why a player of limited experience would go there and see that as a place he would make his name was a mystery to me.
But then I suppose that there is also the argument of, if you believe in yourself, why wouldn't you?
I think Anthony's right. I think that had he stayed on for another season, maybe another 2 seasons, and really established himself as a guy who could walk with Larsen and Sutton and people like that, then he could move. But he was still a boy that we'd sent out and loaned and brought back. And he hadn't really established himself as a top Celtic player. He was a promising player. And I think he did a very poor decision.
Yeah, but the point I would make the other way around is if you are Liam Miller, firstly, it's the argument that everybody makes when if Celtic went in for a youngster and people say, oh, he should stay an extra season at whatever team it would be, Dundee United or whatever. The argument is always, yes, but he's getting an opportunity
exactly.
to double his wages, go and play for a better club. What happens if he stays at Dundee United and next week uh-huh. breaks his leg? He's just lost out on the opportunity to earn an absolute fortune.
There's a fine line between being a professional and being a mercenary. And there is a lot of guys these days that, frankly, would you know, sell their granny to make money because, you know, footballers are such... That's their main aim. And as I said there, we shouldn't be too harsh on them because they are professionals. But
well, that's what they do for a living. And I would actually argue, out of our current squad... There's only one player I can think of who comes across to me as not, as someone who would, if he was offered a 10 grand a week pay rise, wouldn't take it. And he would stay at Celtic.
One player?
Aye.
Oh,
not just.
Who would that be?
Yeah, Samaras.
Samaras?
Yeah.
All right, mm-hmm.
He's the only player I can see in our current squad that I think if somebody came along and said, we'll give you an extra 10 grand a week, he'd say, no, I love Celtic.
See, if you think about Samaras, yeah, I think you know that I've been a big critic of him in the past, but I think he falls into the Henrik Larsson bracket. There's some guys who are happy with a lot, and you know, in fairness, they're
yes.
earning a lot of money. I mean, none of the two of them are ever going to be in the breadline. But there's something to be said by being settled in your working life, being settled in your family life, being settled in your home. And what is the point of taking a risk and moving somewhere else that you may not like, even though you're getting more money?
Yes, and in release, so if we get back to what started this, Liam Miller, and you talked about the Anderlecht game, I can remember being in Belgium at the Anderlecht game and myself mm-hmm. and Neil McCallum from our site having a conversation about how... It was a game that Stylian Petrov should have taken by the scruff of the neck because after 26 minutes, Anderlecht were down to 10 mm-hmm. men.
Yeah.
And Stylian Petrov, one of the other midfielders we are discussing, disappeared that night. And I remember us talking about the fact that Liam Miller only played for 10 minutes. He only came on for the last 10 minutes. We were actually talking in that 10 minutes. He looked more of a man on the park than any of the likes of Chris Sutton, Alan Thompson, Stylian Petrov had. And I remember all the way home we were discussing that what we should do is if we can get money for Stylian Petrov, sell him, and we should try and start building the team around Liam Miller because he was the future of the Celtic.
He looked against Anderlecht at Celtic Park and against Lyon, he was quite brilliant. And he looked as if he was going to be a really big player. And somebody obviously turned his head because he was away at Christmas, if I remember rightly.
Well, he wasn't... Actually, he was... He signed
right.
a P contract mm-hmm. at Christmas and we finished third in the group and went on and played... And
yeah.
then played Barcelona.
Yeah.
In the UEFA Cup, and I remember being in the Nou Camp in the 0-0 game against Barcelona and people around me booing
mm-hmm.
Liam Miller
yeah.
as he came on the park. And I remember thinking that was disgraceful because he was only wanting to better himself. And I remember sitting there thinking, is there a single one of you that's booing that if somebody came along, wherever you work, and said, I'll double your money to go and work for another company, how many of the people boom would turn around and say, no, I quite like my company, I don't want double
Harry,
money.
Can I take exception in one thing? I appreciate what you're saying there, mm-hmm. and you're speaking a lot of sense, and I find it hard to disagree with you. But from a personal basis, if I was playing for Celtic, and I was offered £100,000, I wouldn't go, I would stay at Celtic, because that's where my heart is. And that's why some of us get a wee bit upset that Miller... It's not that he left, it's the manner in which he left, because the signing, the pre-contract, he didn't need to do that. He could have waited to the end of the season left. But he actually threw a spanner in the works to Celtic at that time, and he was quite fortunate that he got an injury. I mean, if we're going to be critical, he was almost always injured. But he did get an injury, and he missed a few months before he came back in then. And I would never advocate booing any Celtic player at any time, because at the end of the day, as a Celtic fan, somebody who prides myself in being a Celtic fan, I support the 11 jerseys. Whoever takes the field in the Celtic jerseys will get more support. But I think I appreciate what you're saying there, but there was a lot of people at the time who were very, very upset, not that he left, but in the manner of which he left. And the other thing as well is, and I don't know if you remember this, there's no proving this, but there was a wee bit of jiggery pokery at the time. It was estimated or it was thought that Alec Ferguson signed Liam Miller somehow as a payback against Dermot Desmond, because these Irish guys, the Coolmore Mafia, whatever they call themselves, had actually fallen out. Now, again, there's no evidence of that, but there was something strange happening behind the scenes, that the manager of Manchester United should turn up at Celtic Park and sign a guy who at that time hadn't even played 20 games in the first team.
Mm-hmm. If I remember rightly, Liam, as you say, Liam Miller had injury problems, and Celtic nursed him through those. There was a wee sense of ingratitude in the way that he did it. No, I wouldn't argue with his right to go and double his wages, because, I mean, that's why Gary Hooper left. I don't think he left because he didn't like Celtic. But I do think he kind of owed them a wee bit for sticking with him. And he didn't hang around. I just thought it was wrong.
I just don't know if there's many footballers, particularly at the age of, what age would he have been? 22, 20, yeah.
To be fair to the boy, Manchester United's going to turn any heads. That myself included.
Yeah, he's an Irish.
You know, he would be flattered. And Ferguson is such an imposing personality. And at that time, Roy Keane was there. And I've got no doubt that Roy Keane whispered sweet nothings in his ear.
Yeah.
To get his favour, to get him down to Old Trafford. So maybe we should move on a wee bit with Miller, because he did only play two games.
That was the point, though. Games, they had Roy Keane, yep. And did he not have Scholes? And did he not have Nick, what was his name, the wee red-headed guy?
Yeah, and that's exactly how I would have then sold Manchester United. Yeah, but that's exactly how I would have sold Manchester United to Liam Miller. I would have said, Roy Keane, Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs, David Beckham, they're all moving on a bit, they're all getting older, they're not going to be around forever. Would you not like to learn your football with some of the greatest players that have ever strutted their stuff in Europe in the last 30 years, and you will naturally progress into the first team as they return?
Wait a minute.
Take the point. He was playing with Paul Lambert, Larson, Sutton, people. He was playing with great players. He was learning his trade at a great team at the time. So I don't.
Playing in it, I think sometimes.
He wasn't going to play for Manchester
United. But not playing in the English Premiership.
He wasn't going to play for Manchester United.
But then that, you're missing my other point. See if I'm good enough to play for Celtic at 22. I wouldn't be good enough to play for Celtic at 22 if I didn't think I was good enough to play for Manchester United.
I take that point. I do take your point.
So my point being, if somebody comes along, you're obviously going to think to yourself, yes, because I'm good enough to get in that Man United team.
Yes, what I was disagreeing with you about was the fact that that was a better nursery in terms of developing him as a player, because I don't think.
No, I wasn't saying it was. I'm saying that's what I would have sold it to Liam Miller. That's what I would have said.
As also to be said at that time,
anyway,
if you look at it from a Manchester United viewpoint, Alec Ferguson was going through, by his standards, a wee sticky patch. And Liam Miller, I've been down in Manchester, and Manchester United fans are absolutely mystified as to what Alec Ferguson saw in Liam Miller, because obviously they didn't get to see the games that we were seeing. And we rated him pretty well. There was another guy at the time, Ferguson signed, but Eric Jemba, And he was of the ilk of Liam Miller, in the, he was going to be the guy who was going to be blooded to replace Paul Scholes and these other fantastic players that were getting on a wee bit. And there was a few sort of midfield signings at that time for United that were a bit ropey. There's another guy that should spring to mind, and I just can't remember his name. But Jemba Jemba and Liam Miller came in at the same time, and neither of the two of them made the grade.
Well, they've got quite a few just now that Ferguson signed for Davy Moyes to take over, who I don't think are Manchester United class, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the Celtic midfield. If we look at the first Celtic group stage game that they played in Champions League football, the midfield comprised of Alan Thompson, Paul Lambert, because it was five across, mm-hmm. It was 3-5-2, so it was Alan Thompson on the left, Lambert, Lennon, Petrov, Thompson, and Agat. I said that Lambert on the left, I meant Thompson on the left. So that was the five across the middle of the park in our first game when we played Juventus. Alan Thompson eventually made 13 appearances. Lambert, 6. Leo Lennon, as you pointed out, St. Anthony. I suppose what you've got there is Lambert Lennon as the holding
do you remember the controversy at the time when we signed Neil Lennon? There was a big argument, mostly in the media, that neither him and Paul Lambert could play together, and they were very similar players in the respect that they like to take, they sit in front of the back four, they read the game well, they were good passers, if you're going to be a wee bit critical, they were never the fastest thing in 2 feet. I think that was maybe a failing in their game. But overall, the position they played in front of the back four, they were there to protect the back four. And when the two of them played together, I remember there was great debate at the time, even amongst the Celtic fans, that somehow, why are we signing this Neil Lennon? He's not what we need because we've got Paul Lambert. And I think it says a lot for the two of them that they did play together, and when they sat in front of that back four, they gave it great protection, especially in European games. And that midfield that you read out there, the one against Juventus with the five midfield, with Agath on the right, across to Thompson on the left, they say great teams have perfect balance. And when you look at great sides through the years, there's no doubt that you don't play square pegs in round holes. And that midfield has got a lovely balance. When you think of Didi Agath on the right-hand side, bombing up and down with his pace, and then you've got Thompson on the left-hand side, not as fast as Agath, but maybe a wee bit more cultured and taking set pieces, corner kicks and free kicks. And then you've got Petrov as a sort of free man in front of Lambert and Lennon, able to bomb forward and support the forwards. That was a phenomenal midfield.
It was, in fact, you mentioned about Agat, and I know it's not in the group stages, but I always remember standing in the Amsterdam Arena in the two-legged game against Ajax before the Juventus game, and turning to the person next to me and saying, you know, the only criticism I would give of Agat is when we signed him, he was a forward, and he doesn't look as though he could score. Literally 60 seconds later, Agat went up the park and scored one of the three goals that we scored against
Ajax. One of the most memorable goals ever in Celtic's European history. That was a fantastic goal.
It was. But though you're right, it was a great balance for them. And I think it was because it was a concept at the time that teams had one holding mm-hmm. midfield player. And what we then had, because we had three at the back, with two holding midfield players sitting in front of those three, to then allow Petrov and Thompson and Agat, and if Bobby Petter was playing instead of Thompson, Bobby Petter also just to flood forward. And in many ways, it was almost we had five defensive players on the park and five attacking players mm-hmm. on the park.
I
think
your point about the balance. But I thought that was a really good team. But I wasn't sure when you were talking about picking this best ever European team, whether you were going to pick the best players, in terms of who we saw as the best players. But I always thought that Paul Lambert was a far superior player to Neil Lennon. And if I had a choice between the two, it would have been Paul Lambert, because I thought he was a better footballer.
I think the thing that Lambert had in his advantage, Larky, was the fact that Lambert had started his career as a forward-minded player. He'd actually, games for St Mirren, he'd played on the wing and he played in an attacking midfield position, whereas Neil Lennon, throughout his career, ever since, I mean, people forget, he started his career at Manchester City. And he was a holding midfield player then, and when he was playing his last games for us, he was still a holding midfield player. So I think Lambert had a wee bit more creativity in him. I think it came naturally to Lambert, whereas Neil Lennon, I think what he did, he was tremendously good at, and he was a very, very important part of Martin O'Neill's team. But, you know, creating, he wasn't there to create, he was there to break up attacks. And he was there to protect his back four. But I agree with what you're saying there. I think if you looked at the two objectively, Lambert had a wee bit more in his make-up for going forward and creating.
I think
I always remember...
He was turned into a kind of holding midfield player when he played for Borussia Dortmund. Mm-hmm. When he went to Germany, he was just seen as an inside forward. You know what I mean? But they looked at him and they saw... He had certain gifts, and he became a terrific defensive midfield player. But he had a lot of creative talents as well.
I think it was interesting what that move to Germany did for Lambert. I always remember my brother commenting that if we'd have gone and spent £1 million to sign Paul Lambert from Motherwell, the Celtic fans wouldn't have been that happy. But we would go and get Paul Lambert from Borussia Dortmund.
I saw him playing here for Scottish, it was under 19s, I think, against Northern Ireland for Queen of the South down at Palmerston. And I came away from the game thinking what a tremendous player he was. He was at St Mirren. And all through his career, I kept thinking, I wish the Celtic would sign him. And then away to Germany, I thought, we'll never see him again. And I remember my son pulling me up and saying, they've got him at last. Because I always thought he would be a great Celtic player.
Because the thing about Lambert is, when you look back in his early career, when he started, he was a bit like a schoolboy prodigy. I'm sure he was 17 years old when he won the Scottish Cup with St Mirren. And for a few years after that, he was hot property. But for some reason, it never quite worked out. And when he went to Motherwell, personally, I thought, this is a guy in the slides. He's went from St Mirren to Motherwell. That's not a great move in anybody's books. I mean, you're basically leaving... they're two very similar teams. So when he went to Motherwell, I thought that this is a guy that's maybe just going to get in the division. You might never hear him again. And it's his eternal credit that not many Scottish players are good enough or adventurous enough to actually go to Europe and try and better themselves. Another thing that impressed me about Paul Lambert is that he embraced the German culture. He learned the language. And that's a thing a lot of British players fall in because they're either too lazy or quite frankly, they're too thick to learn. And Lambert was... if it hadn't been for his...
For most of them, it's...
Yeah,
I think if his mother, if his wife hadn't been unsettled, he would have stayed there.
I was just about to say that. If it wasn't for his wife being homesick, he'd still have been, he wouldn't have came back.
No.
Absolutely.
We were very lucky that his wife was unsettled.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to digress slightly here. If we're talking about the merits of Paul Lambert, if somebody was to say to you, what was the best game Paul Lambert ever played, then you might think the game against Rangers where he scored the cracking goal at New Year, and you know there was all these European games that he played in, and he was a fantastic Celtic player. But the one game that I'll always be grateful to Paul Lambert for, and nobody remembers it for obvious reasons, see the day that we beat St Johnstone at Parkhead to win 10 in a row, to stop them getting 10 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Lambert was absolutely fantastic that day because when it was 1-0, and personally speaking, I was as nervous as hell, and he was the guy that kept showing for the ball and taking the ball and keeping things moving. And he showed a lot of experience that day. I mean, a couple of years, I think 1 year previously, He'd been playing in the European Cup final for Dortmund against Juventus. So he wasn't going to be phased in a, no matter how important a league game is, against St Johnstone. But I'll always be grateful for that performance, because I thought he was fantastic that day, but nobody ever remembers that, because all we ever remember for that is the goals.
But your points about them, about keeping the ball moving, and your point, Lackey, about the different players, and your point saying about them complementing each other, I felt they did complement each other, because they both did that thing of keeping the ball moving. I thought Lennon was more take it off the keeper or the back, the two centre-halves or back three, whatever it was we were playing, and keeping it moving, whereas Lambert was more of a I'm always here in the middle of the park to keep the ball moving player. And in that Champions League campaign, the second game against Juventus that we won 4-3, I always remember I was working with a colleague who was a director of a lower league SFL team at the time. And he used to keep saying that he didn't understand what the Celtic fans were raving so much about, in particular Neil Lennon and Chris Sutton. He just couldn't see it. And then he went to that game. And I remember him saying to me, I now know why you guys keep coming on and telling me how fantastic Neil Lennon and Chris Sutton are. Because the amount of stuff that they do off the ball that never gets, that you can never see on a television picture. The reason Henrik Larsson is playing so well is because of the space that Chris Sutton creates. And the reason your defence is so good is because of the options that Neil Lennon shuts down that the ball never gets to. So you don't ever on the television see half of Neil Lennon's work. And he was raving about how fantastic Neil Lennon had been, because the amount of times he shut down an option for Juventus that night, that if you weren't looking for it, you'd never see it, because you just wouldn't see that Juventus hadn't played the ball. And the reason they hadn't played the ball is because Neil Lennon had shut down the space that the guy was wanting to occupy. And I always remember that.
Doubt he was a terrific player. But I just felt that if I were picking a team, I don't think I'd have two midfield players that sat deep, and my choice would be Lambert. But I think Lennon was a great player.
And if we look, talking of having a more attack-minded team, if you then look at the second time we played Juventus that season, that's when Lubomir Marajic got his one and only start in Champions League football. Actually, the midfield, or the middle five in that game, was Bobby Petter on the left, Didier Gat on the right, Lambert and Lennon in the middle, freeing up Lubomir Marajic to just put do his stuff in the middle of the park.
I'm going to be the unpopular one here and say that, to my eternal shame, that if I was to pick an all-time team, Celtic team that I've seen, players that I've seen in the flesh, Lubo would be in there, and there's no doubt about it. I would have him in it. I think he was pound for pound the greatest footballer I've ever seen in a Celtic jersey. Very few players have given me the pleasure that he gave. And the thing I loved about him as well is he was quite a modest man for his talents, and he just looked happy to be in the pitch. Now, that night against Juventus, he gave a virtuoso performance. He was absolutely fantastic. And I was so pleased that even at his age and his career, that he'd eventually go to the Holy Grail and played a Champions League game. But if we're going to pick a midfield, if he's only made one appearance, then I don't think Lubo can be in it. And I speak as one of his biggest fans.
I would pick him when I was sort of sitting down. I told Aidan last night about it. He agreed too. He would have been, he would have had Lubo on the team, even on the basis of one performance. I thought that night summed O'Neill's attitude to Lubo up. I always thought that Martin didn't trust genius. But he played Lubo that night, and Lubo ran riot and caused chaos. And then when Celtic went 4-2 ahead, he took Lubo off. It was the first thing he did when Sutton's volley hit the net. He turned round to Petrov and said, "You get stripped." And see, from then on, Juventus were all over him. But when Lubo was on the park, he ran riot.
See, to be fair, Lackey, I don't think it was because he didn't trust Lubo that night. I think Lubo's legs were going at the time, and he couldn't get you 90 minutes at that stage. That was his last season, and you know, there was games that he either played the beginning or he came on as a sub. And again, I speak as one of his biggest fans, and One of my biggest regrets as a Celtic fan is that if we didn't get Lubo Marasic 10 years previously, he would have been sensational.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the end of that season, when we lost the cup final, he kept Lubo on the bench. And then said he was waiting for extra time. I think I've argued before, if he brought Lubo in half an hour to go, there would have been extra time.
Well, do you know, that's a sore point to me to this day because I'm singing through the same hymn sheet here. I remember standing that day at Hampden and Celtic didn't play particularly well that day. And you know, you're thinking you've got a player like that on the bench and understand what Neil was getting at. But, you know, he took a gamble and his gamble failed because we didn't make extra time.
No, totally failed. However, he
also
He was replaced in that game by Stylian Petrov, who was the main person who played at Lubo's expense in the setup that Anil had. It was either going to be Lubo or Petrov. Mm-hmm. And Petrov was the man who got most of the games. And Petrov obviously then
Petrov
went
had
on
the legs.
To play 17 Champions League games.
Now, the one thing Petrov had at that point is he had the stamina and the legs that Lubo didn't have. But the other thing as well is, I remember arguing with people at the time running about that Champions League campaign and saying, I would play Petrov and Mirafchik, but that would mean leaving either Lennon or Lambert out, and that was never going to happen with Martin O'Neill.
Exactly.
And that's not a criticism, that's just an observation.
So we had those players, and we had Petrov, and people seem to forget that it wasn't, although Bobby Petter played two games, and actually we talked about UEFA Cup runs as well. At that time, it was only from about the end of that season onwards that Alan Thompson was the stick-on wide left player for Martin O'Neill. And I remember somebody commenting to me, in Martin O'Neill's last season, I'm just thinking about Thompson, somebody commenting to me that the reason they felt that Alan Thompson never looked the same in Martin O'Neill's last season or then once Strachan came along, what made Alan Thompson such a great player was the runs that Henrik Larsson made off the ball. His ability to whip a ball down the line or put a cross in and knowing that movement of Henrik Larsson would get something out of it.
Well, there's one of the Celtic DVDs, I can't remember which one it is, Pat Creven's talking, and he's asked about what great players Bertie Auld and Bobby Murdoch were, which they undoubtedly were, and Pat Creven says, they were great players, he says, but the strength of Celtic at that time, he says, was the movement up front with Johnston, Wallace, Chalmers and Lennox. They would run all day for you, they would run into space, and they would interchange positions, which would confuse the opposition. And that's exactly what you're saying there, because Hendrick's movement was phenomenal, and it must have been a dream for Thompson to look up and see that movement up front, and just be able to float balls through him and find him. Great midfield players are often reliant on having the forwards in front of them, and the other thing as well is good forwards can read passes as well. So not only was Thompson a great passer there, but obviously Henrik could read the passes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, actually, I'm thinking in a comment that you made, Lackey, about on just one appearance you'd have Mirafchik in the team. And I'm thinking about how many creative, out in the midfield, how many creative midfielders would you have in a
two.
Two. So, and how many would you have seen?
It depends on the formation you're playing. If you're playing the five, then you really need two holding midfield players because you've got two wide men at that point. But if you're playing an orthodox four, then I think you could cope with two.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have two, to try and get some structure around talking about the midfield, rather than do it chronologically, I'm just thinking the sort of creative players that we've had then, in terms of out-and-out creative, not a wide player or whatever, would be Mirafchik, Nakamura, Sean Maloney.
What about McGeady?
Mm-hmm.
And McGeady. Mm-hmm. I'd just better get to McGeady. Mm-hmm. So what two out of those would you have?
I would have,
Lackey, you start, since you're continually talking about. I mean, you thought Paddy McCourt was a great player, so you can start.
I was going on the basis that the last time you talked to Mark, I think that he'd pulled across the back. Right.
Yeah. But it doesn't have to be since person's own choice.
That's the way I was thinking of the team was pulled across the back. So I would have put in the midfield, and I would have Nakamura and Maravchik playing.
I'm going to be blunt here. I don't think you can compare Nakamura and Maravchik against McGeady and Maloney. And that's not a slight against Sean Maloney and Aidan McGeady, who were great Celtic players, and I've got a high regard for them. But again, in my time supporting Celtic, the two guys that I think you could tag as a genius is Nakamura and Maravchik. Regret that I have, that we didn't see Nakamura at his very best, because Strachan used to play him out wide in the right, and he was good there and he could influence things. But see, if he'd have played maybe just in front of Lennon and Lambert with a free roll, I think Nakamura would have been sensational. I don't think we've ever seen the best of him.
There was the odd times when the game looked as if it was slipping away from him, he would let him off the leash and he would win the game.
That's right.
He's a wonderful, wonderful footballer.
And obviously, you can't, if you're talking about Nakamura in Champions League football, to do the same thing twice to a world-class goalkeeper in Van der Sar. I mean, I actually remember the second one at the Manchester United game at Celtic Park, him standing over the ball and thinking, it's just 5 yards too far out. If it was just 5 yards closer, I think he'd score this, but it's just 5 yards too far out. And then for him to put it right in that top right, Van der Sar's top left was just incredible.
I had the pleasure of being in Old Trafford in the first game, and the misfortune actually had been the Stretford end amongst the Man United fans, and I'll never forget that. But when I just seen the ball coming over the wall, and I knew instantly that's in the net, because Van der Sar, there was no way he was getting that. But the second free kick at Parkhead was phenomenal. But I remember listening to TalkSport at the time, which is very obviously very English Premiership orientated. You know, that's the holy grail. They don't think that football exists outside the EPL, and they were raving about that free kick. They couldn't believe the quality, and not only that, the distance, the trajectory, everything about that free kick. It was inch perfect, world class.
So for both of you, Nakamura and Maravchik would be ahead of McGeady and Maloney if we're to look at creative
players. I think you're right.
Okay, if we were to then look at... If we were to then look at some of the sort of... in that creativeness, I suppose you could also chuck in Chris Commons and James Forrest.
I'm not in the same class.
No, James Forrest has played two games and he's still a work in progress, to coin a phrase. But I'm going to give I'm going to flag up Chris Commons here, because Chris Commons, the last two seasons at Celtic, has been a godsend. I don't know where we'd be without him, because he's the only one in the team that's got composure and can put his foot in a ball and beat a man and pass a ball a considerable distance, because the rest of our midfield players just want to play the ball across the park, and he's the only one that actually gets his head up and hits a forward pass. And when you think of the goals he has scored in the qualifiers, maybe he's a wee bit short when we go into the Champions League proper, but I'll always be grateful to Chris Commons for the goals that he's got. The Carrigandy goal was sensational. So it was, and we owe him a great debt, because we're not blessed with players like that now. And we've just mentioned Nakamura there. If there's a message to Neil Lennon, it is you need to find a Nakamura type in the team, because we're so close to having a really good team here, and the only thing that I think we lack is creativity in the middle of the park.
He also had tremendous composure, as did Lobo, which a lot of the present team don't have. I think Chris Commons is a good player, but I don't think he comes into the same category as Nakamura.
You can't compare me to Nakamura.
No, and then if we move away from the creative, you're then looking at a lot of hard-working, and some of these adjectives apply to a lesser or great extent, hard-working, steady midfielders. When you've got Hartley with 11 starts, Donati with 5 starts, Gravison with 4 starts, Barry Robson with 5 starts, Jiří Jarasík with 8, Evander Snow with 5 starts in Champions League football, Scott Brown with 19 starts, Victor Wanyama with 7 starts, Joe Ledley with 4, and Birim Kayal with 2. So do any of you guys want to talk about the benefits of any of those players? I'm thinking in particular Hartley getting 11 starts.
I like Paul Hartley. I thought he was a decent player, but I think he played 11 times in the Champions League.
I thought Hartley was very similar in style to Paul Lambert, because they had been, certainly in Hartley's case, he'd been a considerably talented attacking midfield player, a goal-scoring midfield player. I always thought that Gordon Strachan did him a disservice by turning him into a holding midfield player. And I think he tried to do the Hartley, and I suppose he had a fair bit of success, because Hartley turned in some really good performances with Celtic and won a few trophies, played a few games in the Champions League. He scored a cracking header in Moscow, against Spartak Moscow. The similarities between Lambert and Hartley there's a lot, because the two of them had been, they never started as defensive midfield players, but they were converted into that. And I often think that we did a disservice to Paul Hartley, because he was a better player than that. And I think we didn't see the best of him.
We also got him quite late in his career.
Yeah.
You know, but there are players. I was intrigued by the fact that Gravison, when we bought him, he looked to be a tremendous acquisition. He played 66 times for Denmark. And I thought, well, what a watch for this guy. But he just, for all his ability, never really seemed to. And I thought he tried really hard. But he just didn't fit in, did he?
Listen, in all the years, again, the support in Celtic, he must be one of the biggest disappointments. I remember being overjoyed when we signed him in the first couple of months. He was absolutely fantastic. But when you think how he sort of fizzled out and towards the end, I think it was clear that his heart was near it. He wasn't interested. But the fair point of view, I think it was a watershed, and that's when the board and Peter Lovell say there's no going to be any more of these blue chip signings, because we can't afford to have a guy in there earning probably £30,000 a week if he's not pulling his weight. Because a guy at 30 grand in the SPL playing with Celtic should be turning in Larson-esque performances,
yes,
and really being a difference between being an ordinary team and being a fantastic team. And I think that was the day that the Celtic board basically gave up chasing the bigger name players and started to take it down the road. Trying to unearth the next big thing.
You're saying Keane?
Yeah, I think Keane was a signing that wasn't so much for on the park, it was for selling merchandise off the park. And I remember going to the Celtic shop in Dublin after Roy Keane signed. And it shouldn't have been called the Celtic shop, it should have been called the Roy Keane shop.
I was talking about Robbie Keane.
Well, he never played the Champions League, did he?
No, I'm not talking about that, but you're talking about marquee signings.
But Robbie Keane was only on loan. I don't think we were ever in with a serious shout at getting Robbie Keane. He was just a signing of the support to sort of get his back on board after what was happening with Mowbray.
But your point saying about Gravesen and Yuri Yarisic, like you, I was at Old Trafford in the 3-2 defeat. And I think I said this in the first podcast, the thing that really got me in that game that filled me with confidence was that the players suddenly seemed confident on the ball, that they were prepared to take the ball off a colleague when the players around them and didn't think that the first thing they had to do when they were approached by an opponent was boot it up the park. And Gravesen and Yarisic were contributing to that, but I also remember I knew someone in the Celtic squad at that time, and Gravesen thought, because he had come to Celtic from Real Madrid and was being paraded as the blue chip signing, that then meant that Gravesen had the freedom to play the football that he wanted to play, and was continually falling out with the manager in training when the manager was trying to get him to play within a structure that Gravesen thought he was coming to play the de-shackled football that he could just go and enjoy himself.
Was that not true of him at Madrid as well?
Oh, the rumour at Madrid is that they signed the wrong player. They signed a baldy-headed player from Everton.
He was a loose cannon at Madrid as well. Even when he was playing well, there was no structure to the way he played. He was very much a free spirit.
But you're right, Sam, just like you, I thought, brilliant, Gravesen, this will be the player that will really take us. And the thing I remember being most disappointed in was when, because Gravesen was in the team that went to play Copenhagen. And we'd already qualified for the last 16. And I thought, right, this is it. This is the moment that it's all going to come out. We're going to win our away from home Champions League game. We're going to go to Copenhagen. The pressure's off. We do not need to win this game. And we lost 3-1.
I remember being angry that night for a different reason. As you said there, we had qualified after beating Manchester United. And it's worth well pointing out at the time that Gerry McNee and STV could they calculate that we qualified,
yes.
Which was quite a hilarious thing looking back on. Now, when we went to Copenhagen for the last game, we're in pole position. If we'd have won in Copenhagen, then you're into the last 16 as a seeded team. Now,
yeah,
but when you get into the last 16, the old argument is there isn't any bad teams in it, which is a fair point. But you sort of, if you're seeded in that, then you're getting a wee break because you're maybe not getting a Barcelona or a Real Madrid or a Bayern Munich. You could maybe get a Benfica or a Russian team or a French team, somebody who's more on your level. And I think Strachan let us down that night because his team selection, if I recollect, there was maybe four or five changes in it to give guys a rest. And we should have went for broke that night. Twofold. Number one, as you say, to get a monkey off our back with the away win. And secondly, we could have damn well finished it as top of that group and been seeded in the last 16. And that was a stupid thing in hindsight to do.
You mentioned Yuri Yarisic.
Yarisic
played against Manchester United. Remember, he got fouled.
He did.
He fouled from that
twice.
Year or two. Yes. But he was another one that kind of disappointed because he went away afterwards and played in La Liga. So he was clearly a very good player. And yet he just never ever seemed to be a fit for the Scottish League. And I think that
I remember when we signed Yarisic, reading somewhere in the press that Alec Ferguson was astounded that we'd managed to get a player of that quality.
If you remember Yarisic signing at the time, Yarisic was actually perceived as being Cillian Petrov's replacement. You know, Petrov had been down to Aston Villa for X millions of pounds, and we were on the lookout for a cultured, attacking, goal-scoring midfield player. And Yarisic fitted the bill perfectly. And I remember at the time Mourinho at Chelsea said that he was desperately sorry to see Yarisic go, But you let him go because he wouldn't get in the game. You had Lampard and Makaleli and you know, fantastic players there at Stamford Bridge at the time. And I think Jarosik had to go to benefit his career. And was playing. The other advantage that we had in the days is there was two or three times we won the league and we knew instantly that we were in the Champions League. The problem we have these days is we have to come through these qualifiers. And it means that you get a difficulty and players are hanging off and they're saying, I wouldn't mind going to Celtic if they were in the Champions League, but what happens if they lose that qualifier? I don't want to spend a 3 years in the SPL and a sort of backwater when I could maybe get a game in for a lower league, English Premier League team.
I think we have to be honest. Although we've got a brand name, to use the terminology of the time, really, nobody wants to come and play in Scotland unless we are playing Champions League football now. And that's our biggest problem. And it's a bit of a catch-22, in fact. You know, to digress in the team just for a moment, there is a small part of me that thinks one way we've got a better chance of improving the Scottish coefficient is for us to finish third in Champions League football for a couple of years and get some wins in
that's
the UEFA Cup.
That's a sore point to me, Harry, because I was watching the Europa League the other night. Teams like Wigan are going to end up with a bigger coefficient than us, in theory, because we're playing Barcelona and AC Milan and Ajax, and they're playing, with all due respect, mediocre continental teams. And there has to be some way of recognising that if you're in the Champions League, you get a better coefficient than you know. Like, ideally, for coefficients, if you spent 2 or 3 years in the Europa League getting to the quarterfinals, semi-finals and finals, you would be rated one of the best teams in Europe in terms of the coefficient.
Well, yes. But anyway, that's a matter for getting forward. So,
by the way, did you see we've today's news about the signing of Effie Ambrose?
Yes, I was
intrigued because remember he came and he was only there a few months. We were hearing all these reports in the press that he was unsettled and he was ready to bail out. Then all of a sudden he signs a 4-year contract. That was quite encouraging.
Well, we'll see if he's here.
Yeah, but he signed a contract. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it guarantees you a bigger like transfer fee these days. The transfer fee is dictated by the length of time.
Stelian Petros signed a new contract a month before.
Thank God he did, because we would never get $6 million.
That's the very fact that you can persuade him to sign a new contract would indicate that he must be quite happy, because he could sit out his contract and leave. He doesn't need to sit about.
But back onto the midfielders, going through the list that I've got, between Gravesen and Jarosik is Barry Robson with 5 Champions League games.
Barry Robson's player. He's a bit one-footed, but he was a decent player. Made the most.
Barry Robson's problem was, and if you look at his merits, he was a good midfield player, he was a good tackle, he could pass, but he lacked pace. And like a lot of the Scottish players, in order to play in the Champions League or international level, you really need to have a burst of pace. And that's what let Barry down. But he was a real good servant to Celtic. And he had his moment in the sun with that header against Barcelona.
And actually, was that Barry Robson's first?
I think it was.
No.
Because, do you know, the overriding thing I remember about that game was thinking to myself, we're going to have to sub Barry Robson at half time because he's so far out of his depth here. It's a bit embarrassing for the poor guy. Nothing wrong with him, but he's a million miles away from being able to compete with the likes of Iniesta, Ronaldinho, Thierry Henry, Messi, Deco. We need to get him off the park. Ball goes up and he does that looping header in the back of the net and he scores. The next 7 minutes of the first half, I still thought he's out of his depth. But he played the whole game.
See, the thing about Robson that got him by was Barry Robson was a player of great heart. He was a real trier.
Yes.
He was a tackler. He would run all day for you. And there's a lot to be said about having players like that in the team, because, you know, in amongst your Nakamuras and your Maravsics, and the thing that Barry Robson will always be remembered for is he fired us to the title in 2008 at a time that the team was dying at its feet. And he gave us a he revitalised that team. And he'll always be remembered for that.
He gave drive in the midfield. He gave you a drive.
He did.
A good, honest pro.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But not Champions League quality, necessarily. Which also, there's then two other players in the list of players, as I've got them laid out in front of me, who started five games each. Massimo Donati. Another player that, I don't know about you guys, I just kept thinking, there's got to be something more from this guy.
He was a disappointment.
Can you see a pattern emerging here? Gravesen, Jarosic, Donati, Barry Robson. Strachan went through a midfield player like hot dinners. And he never ever found a settled formation for his central midfield. He would have Nakamura wide on the right, and he would have Aidan McGeady or Sean Maloney on the left. But he never found the right balance and the right blend in centre midfield. And to the day he left, four seasons he was there, I'm a Strachan fan to the point of view. I think he was terrific for... I know he's got his critics and the churlish to not acknowledge that. But in my eyes, he did a fantastic job. But if he had an Achilles heel, he was a very bad judge of central midfield players.
That's funny coming from a central midfield player, isn't it?
He was a fantastic player.
But I thought his problem was, not to get too much into the, you know, too much like a hipster type thing, but I thought his problem was he played a style of football that would have been suited to 4-2-3-1, but he played 4-4-2. So what I mean by that is he played two up front and two holding midfield players and two wide guys, and our most tedious football was when we played that system, because there was this massive hole. As you say, I always got the impression the reason he went through Donati, Gravesen, Robson, Jarosic, Snow, Pearce, he was trying to find a player who could play, who could sit and be a box-to-box player at the same time.
It used to annoy me, actually, because there was a couple of games against Rangers at that period that really upset me, in that we were getting totally overrun in midfield, because Nakamura would be penned in the right side, maybe maybe having a poor game on the left side, and it would leave two of our central midfielders up against three or four Rangers players, because Walter Smith at that point was the one for being adventurous, never was one for being adventurous. And what he would do is he would have a tight four or maybe even a five in midfield, and he would get swamped in midfield, not because they were better players, but because we were getting outnumbered. And Gordon could sometimes, he was either being stubborn or he wasn't seeing that. And that was a wee bit frustrating.
So for most people, if you were to speak about Massimo Donati, the one overriding thing, their abiding memory of him would be a Champions League goal.
Yeah, that goal.
That goal,
although
yes.
He did score again, he scored a peach at... Highbury.
He scored against the Arsenal,
didn't he? Mm-hmm. He scored a good one there, but obviously that was a qualifier, not in the group stages. But no, that night against, the one thing about Donati is he had a pedigree as well. You know, when you come fitly and you played for AC Milan, then you've got to have something going for you. And again, I have to say that Donati has to get filed with Gravesen and Jarosic and disappointment category.
Yep. Now, where would you file Evander Snow?
Is he not an experiment?
Was never...
Project. He was a young player, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He was, yeah.
He was never a regular Evander Snow. I don't think he was ever... The funny thing about Evander Snow...
But he started five Champions League
games. Yeah, no, but do you know the funny thing? See, looking at the list that you sent there, Jarosic got eight games and Evander Snow's got five. I would never have said that. My recollection is they played very, very few games. And yet, obviously, Strachan must have had something in mind for them for playing it in Europe.
Yeah, and I think he maybe felt...
I was astonished that McGeady had 17 games.
Mm-hmm.
It seems an awful lot of games.
But there's two campaigns. We got to the last 16.
Right. That's
16 games.
I mean, Sean Maloney only played right? 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They seem to have glossed over McGeady. We haven't really discussed him because the night that he came to the fore, really, was a night against EC Milan, where he ran him up with the Milan right-back, who was it Colaccini?
I don't remember him doing that to anybody else.
Is that the guy for Newcastle, Colaccini? Is that a different one?
Well, I couldn't tell you if
it's
the same
one. My recollection is that night, he was fantastic, and he could beat the guy almost at will, and we should have won that night. I mean, that was a real frustrating night. But I heard Lackey saying there that overall, apart from that and the Benfica game at home, where he had a real purple patch and he scored a good goal for quite a distance, then Aidan didn't do much. In fact, to be blunt again, I recall watching him at Old Trafford and again in the Stretford end, and he was like a wee boy lost that night. And I remember thinking, if you were half the player that you're cracked up to be, you know, you would be out there really bursting a gut to make an impression. And the game passed him by that night. In fact, I think he got substituted.
I never ever thought that he was as good a player as Sean Maloney.
You're all coming to the Aidan McGeady party now. Where were you all 5 years ago? And I used to say this every week in a podcast and get slaughtered.
Oh, I've never thought he was as good a player as Sean Maloney.
No, I never thought he was as good a player as Sean Maloney. And funnily enough, one of the points I used to continually make is the point that St Anthony's just made, which is if he's the player that everybody tells me he is, it's the Champions League games that you would spot it. It's not a
I'm going to defend him here by saying that...
You started this criticism of him. You can't go defend him.
No, but I mean, I'm being objective. What I'm going to say is, in fairness to him, he, throughout his career, was a central midfield player, an attacking midfield player, a guy who was given a free role and because he was so good and would just have that role and a floater. Now, when he came into the team under Martin O'Neill never trusted Aidan McGeady. In fact, Martin, to be honest, there was a few players he didn't trust. But really, Aidan got stuck out in the left wing because it was the only place we could find for him. And he was such a good player at the time as a young boy that he did have to play in the team. And then when Gordon Strachan took over, he also didn't trust him, for rightly or wrongly. But the only point I'm making is I would like to have seen McGeady given a run in the team behind the strikers. And the number 10 is the call in the continent. You know, this creative ball-playing midfield player. Because I honestly believe you would have saw the best of the boy there because sometimes in the wing, he would be limited. He would get boxed in. Frankly, he would run out of grass. He'd just run the ball out. Whereas in the middle of the park, but he's got more space and things open up a wee bit for him.
Pretty much what we were saying earlier about Nakamura.
See the other night watching Barcelona playing?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that really comes home when you're watching them is their game intelligence. They play with tremendous intelligence. They make runs for the sake of making the run because they know it's the right run to make, even though they're not going to get the ball. So, you know, the wee Brazilian guy, Neymar, he made some fantastic runs knowing he wasn't going to get the ball. It created space for other people. But I don't think that McGeady had that intelligence to be a great midfield player.
That was my point at the time. I didn't think he was... Well, I'll not go over it because people have heard it enough at the time, but I thought Aidan McGeady was a very good creative player,
yes.
But his... Getting back to your point, saying as he was growing up and as a schoolboy prodigy, he was no doubt, from about 13 onwards, he was probably 2 years ahead in ability of everybody else in his team. And the problem with that could be I felt he was quite a self-focused player. And as a consequence, so that was why my criticisms were, I think the most goals he ever scored in a season for Celtic, there was one season he scored 8, and every other season for Celtic he scored 4 goals. I think one season he scored 5, I think it was 4, 5,
I think the one
8.
Thing he never improved on is he used to run with his head down. I never played football at any great level, but I remember getting coached. And the one thing the coach would say is, when you're in possession of the ball and you're running it, get your head up, see what's in front of you, and be aware of what's happening around about you. And Aidan's sort of like style, if you like, was to run with the ball at his feet and keep his head down and hope to beat as many players as he could. And I don't think he was ever coached properly into looking up his head and seeing what was in front of him.
I thought when I was on Twitter with you, Harry, discussing a Greek Adonis, I thought that was true of him the other night. For all I've championed him, and I still disagree with saying that I think he's a great heart. I never thought he was a coward ever. But he doesn't play with great intelligence for a man of his ability. Watching a big Aidan McGeady play.
I think he looks up more than Aidan McGeady. I think I agree with you. I remember once having an argument with someone about Paolo Di Canio, because the person was critical that occasionally Paolo Di Canio would run around down a blind alley. And my argument was, see if the one downside of his game is that he runs down blind alley sometimes. See if he didn't have that, he wouldn't be at Celtic Park in the first place. And the one thing I would say, certainly about Samaras, if you ironed that flaw out of his game, he wouldn't be at Celtic Park.
That's the point I was making to you on Twitter. And
I would argue against
for Celtic.
The only thing I would say is against Barcelona, there were a number of occasions where, certainly in the first half, and Neil Lennon seemed to say it after the game, my criticism of the team at half-time, people were not getting in front of the ball when one of our teammates had the ball. I actually felt our problem in the first half, and I know this is supposed to be about a midfielders, but since you mentioned Samaras, I felt in the first half our tactic was, what we're going to do is we're going to play the ball up to Samaras and then he can do his stuff and we'll all stand and watch him. Consequently, Samaras would then run into five Barcelona.
Do you want to know my take on Samaras? And you know that I'm fairly critical of him. I'm supportive of him, again, because he's a Celtic player, but, you know, again, you need to be objective. And if there's failings, then there's failings. I think of all the Celtic players that I've ever seen, his decision-making is the worst I've ever seen. Because he does so many good things. And you know, sometimes he'll run into a space and there'll be a big open space for him to run. And he's fantastic at that. He's got great pace. He's got everything going on. He's got all the attributes you need. And you lay the ball off and you're thinking, why is he doing that? And there was times the other night that he was beating a man, beating two men. Things were opening up. And all you have to do is give a simple pass to one of your colleagues at something support, and he ran into a blind alley every time. His decision-making was shocking.
I have to say, getting back to the players that we're talking about, that was always my biggest criticism of McGeady, that I actually felt, particularly at the top level in Europe, that the reason why I felt Aidan McGeady wasn't the player everybody told me he was his decision-making was, I would say for me, his decision-making was the worst decision-making I've seen in a Celtic player. And it was the amount of times in European games, and I actually can remember almost smashing my television against Copenhagen, I think it was, where Aidan McGeady had gone down the left-hand side with the ball, and as he's in free flow going down the left-hand wing, the left-back goes past him. And Aidan McGeady's got one-on-one, and you think to yourself, right, Leany Taylor has just gone past you. Just tap it down to him, and he's clean through. And Aidan McGeady would do that thing that he did of he stopped, checked in, checked out, and then ran straight into the opponent. There was then, that opponent had 60 yards before he met the next Celtic player, because Lee Naylor had just gone flying past McGeady. And I remember thinking, I actually want to kill you right now, Aidan McGeady. I could have jumped into the television and punched his lights out for being so thick. As the one point, the one moment that the left back goes past him, he then decides not to do what he's been doing all night and decides to check back, check forward, and just run into the opponent.
You know,
That was always my issue with McGeady. But he seemed to save that worst decision making for the bigger games.
There's a thing to be said that the great players make the game look simple and do the simple things. And you know, you look at Henrik Larsson, and he did certain things, and he would make it look easy. But see, to be fair, he's such a good player. He makes it look easy, and that's what makes him a great player. And you know, I think we've all played the game, and obviously we wouldn't be sitting here talking about if we were any good at it. But the thing is, the great players make the game look simple, and that's the thing that Samaras and McGeady, and I'm not taking away that their merits, they've been great Celtic players at their best. But you know, they've got a lot in common in terms of when it comes to the decision making. Is very, very poor at times.
For the ability, in terms of skill and athleticism and things like that, they really underperform. Their abilities far outweigh their performances. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So now, yes, and so now that we've character assassinated Aidan McGeady and the like,
but move on to somebody else. There was a point the other night on Twitter, during the game, that Gregory Ioannidis, you know, Samaras' agent,
yes,
he made a comment about if four opponents surround you, there must be someone in space. And I thought, what's that meant to be about? Because the guy who's doing that the most in terms of not using that space is your client. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
He drew three.
Yeah, but then the argument would be none of the my criticism in the first half is none of the Celtic players were moving into that space.
That happened a couple of times. There were other times when he just got his head down, and he was brave and he was heroic, but it was essentially.
Well, he's not one of the players. That's on
I would have thought in some of the games we've played, he actually did play a mid.
Oh, I mean, it's actually been one of my bugbears in the last sort of season and a half, two seasons, or maybe not this season, but when Samaras was getting his, just as he started winning back the fans, I felt that he started winning back the fans because he was playing as a wide left player rather than a forward. And then we would play a European game and somebody like Andy Walker or Davy Provan would make the comment about the fact that Samaras doesn't get enough goals and it seems to be strange that he's floating out to the wide areas tonight. And you'd be thinking, that's because Lennon's not playing him as a striker anymore.
And I think...
He's playing as a wide left
player. Did he not discuss it with Lennon that was not his best position, playing up front of his back?
Yeah, him and Lennon apparently had a conversation where they both agreed that his greatest strength would be if he's wide left and gets to cut inside and really just gets to run at people.
Well, if you were going to be really hypercritical, you could say that he wants it in the left wing because it's as far out as the action as you can get.
No.
Now, when he came to Celtic, seriously, he'd never played wide left in his life. He was a centre forward. He was forward at Herndon, and he was a centre forward at Manchester City. And for some reason...
But he was also only 23 years of age.
If you watch the footage of his best goals at Herndon, and he comes in from the wing, from either wing. He doesn't play through the middle. He goes wide and he gets the ball and he runs at people and scores great goals. So I don't think he was ever
the one thing I would say about Samaras, I have always thought this is the complete opposite of the comment that you make, St. Anthony. Samaras can get kicked 50 times in a game and he'll run at the guy for the 51st time.
I know, but the thing is, that when I say that he lacks courage, I don't mean that you're saying there.
You used to say that he was a coward.
No, listen, there's a fine line between being a coward and lacking courage. I don't like the word coward because that insinuates somebody who's an imposter.
Are you meaning that he's not thick in that if there's a challenge where there's a much greater chance that he'll break his leg than win the ball, he doesn't try and win the ball?
I'll try and explain it as best I can. See, when it comes to getting in the end of things, it's not so much courage that he lacks, it's heart. It's the fact that if there's a ball and coming across the goal, See, he's running through with a ball, right? And he beats a man, and he overruns it. He just packs it in. There's times that he could get it, and he backed it because
no,
he lacks the heart to do what Chris Sutton did, to
no,
do what Henrik Larsson did, and follow through to the very, very end.
No, you're missing what. No, and I would say Henrik Larsson did exactly what Samaras does. It is a trait of a continental striker. If there is less than 50-50 chance of you getting the ball, why waste your energy? I remember, actually, I know we're talking about midfielders. Mm-hmm. Anthony Stokes against Barcelona midweek reminded me of, I've been to 4 Scotland games in my life. One of those games was when Stevie Crawford was playing for Scotland. Anthony Stokes against Barcelona reminded me of watching Stevie Crawford.
He's dead.
Well, not quite. I'd seen a guy talking about Mark Hughes on a programme on Sky about what made Mark Hughes a great striker and why Mark Hughes had been a successful striker on the continent against for Barcelona. And the point the person was making was the reason why Hughes was a good striker for Barcelona, because he wasn't a British style striker. That when the ball gets played up to, when the ball gets played forward, a continental striker will see the centre half going for it and think, 99 times out of 100, this centre half will win it. So I'm going to take a gamble that the centre half will miss it, and I'm going to go for a run, because 3 times out of 10, the centre half will miss it, and I'll be clean through on goal. And so the anticipation of Hughes was to run for the miss and not bother wasting his energy going for the challenge. Mm-hmm. And when the guy was saying about this, it was when Larsson was at Celtic, and I remember thinking, that's exactly what Larsson does. Don't waste your time going in for a challenge if you don't think you'll win it. Go to anticipate the guy missing it, and 30% of the time you'll be right. So 30% of the time people will say, wow, how's Larsson found all this space? And then the next week, I go to a Scotland game and the ball's going in and the centre-half's going up for it. And I think to myself, he's just a bit underneath this. He's going to miss it. Stevie Crawford realised that the centre-half was going to miss it as the centre-half missed it. Then went for the ball and arrived at the same time as the fullback who was covering for the centre-half. Bit of a challenge. The ball went off for a throw-in. And I thought, oh, that's the difference. And I thought that was that. And for me, that's the difference. Samaras goes for the anticipation. Why waste your energy going for something you're not going to get? And midweek, there was 3 occasions where Stokes just arrived at where the ball was half a second late. And I felt it was because he just lacked that anticipation.
No, I have to say,
but your point about Samaras, I would put it down to it's a continental striker thing of don't waste your energy unless you're guaranteed.
I have to say, in Samaras' credit, and I've acknowledged this on the site, that in the last 18 months or so, he's regenerated himself as a sort of wide left player coming in, and that's certainly his forte. And the thing that I'll give him credit for is a wonderful outball in Europe is when Fraser Forster hits that big long diagonal kick out, and a number of times that Samaras controls it or flicks it on. When you're playing in Europe, that's a good trick to have.
I felt our 0-0 last season against Benfica. So I was just going to say, I felt our 0-0 last season against Benfica was because Samaras.
Well, you see, I tend to disagree. I know what you mean. I think on occasion it's a good out ball, but when it becomes your standard tactic, and that's what it was the other night, all they did was lump it to Samaras. And there were times when Mikkel Lustig or Effie Ambrose or Van Dijk was out of space, and it could have pretended he was going to lump it to Samaras so that they were all drawn to Samaras and then played the ball out. We could maybe have played football from then on. But all Fraser Forster did all night was lump it.
But to move away from the game that, I mean, that took us into talking about it and back on to one player who played alongside Samaras
Scott Brown. This
week, who's had 19 Champions League appearances, Scott Brown. Now, don't talk about you sending off, because that's
been done
in the current term. We're not talking about current performances. Yes. So, Scott Brown, 19 performances, Champions League football.
Well, the first thing that springs to mind about Scott Brown for me is that horrendous tackle that the Benfica guy gave him. a few seasons back. I think we beat them 1-0, and it was maybe the last couple of minutes. That's one of the worst tackles I've ever seen, and it's a miracle that he didn't snap his shin in two that night.
That's
got to be one of the worst tackles that I can't remember the guy's name. He's a black guy. Scott Brown overall, I don't think he's contributed much that jumps out at you that you would say, oh, he did this or he did that. I think that Scott Brown's role when he plays in Europe is to be what Lambert and Lennon were doing before him, is to break the play up and maybe to drive the team forward. And he's another guy that sort of reinvented himself. He was signed as an attacking midfield player for Hibs, and somehow we've converted him into this holding midfield player, if you like.
Although you say that, I remember thinking he was attacking midfield player for Hibs until I remember seeing the stats that he'd scored some... I can't remember these figures. It was something like he'd scored 12 goals for Hibs. So we all thought he was an attacking midfield player, but that's because virtually all these Hibs goals have come against us.
Them all.
Yes, exactly.
No, but Brown, I have to say, again, you need to give him credit. He's another guy in the last two seasons, maybe the last 18 months, that has really came to the fore and upped his game. And there was a point last season that I thought he was playing the best football of his career. I think the thing that he's got in common with Samaras is Lennon has shown great faith in both of them, and I think that they both owe Lennon a great deal of gratitude, because if the two of them had left when Lennon was made permanent manager, that then I wouldn't have shed any tears, because they were underachievers at that point. But I'm really glad that both of them have stayed on, because they have contributed to the team and they've done notable things in the last couple of seasons. When we play in the Champions League, we're punching above our weight. There's no doubt about that. The getting to the Champions League is an achievement for Celtic, especially in the last 5 or 6 years when we've been down the road of signing the lesser known players and giving up maybe in the bigger ones. So Scott Brown,
I think that Brown has. I always come back to the point that people have said he hate to play against him. So you know he's not an outrageously gifted player, but he's a player who imposes himself on other players and makes it difficult for our team to play.
So, we have talked about the midfielders. We've talked about, and we've gone through everybody. Is there anybody you think we've not focused enough on?
Nah, they've all the play.
The only one.
So, you don't need to say it here, but have you got your team in your head? Saint, have you got yours?
I'm telling them I'm off it because one game, I really don't think in the space of one game that you can maybe choose a guy, and there's other guys that played about 17, 18, 20. But Marafi was certainly a very unique player, so I'm willing to go with him.
If I were picking, I'd pick Marafi because I think he was the best player. But taking what Saint says into consideration, the other one I would choose would be Alan Thompson. Because he was an effective player.
And scored
he also
goals.
Made a lot of goals.
Anyway, next week we will be talking about the strikers, so we will see you from there. Cheers for joining us, guys.
Pleasure as always.
Cheers. Take care.
Yes.
So that was podcast 200C. Celtic's Champion League's midfielders. Hopefully you enjoyed that with Lachie Moore and St Anthony. Next week, naturally, it'll be the strikers. And I suppose the only question up for debate is, who plays alongside Henrik Larsson? I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you once again for downloading a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady. Good night.
shattered pictures of the smiles we left behind, smiles we gave to one another for the way we were. Can it be?